The rented van came from a moving company north of town, $60 a day. He tried for a half-day rate because he would need it only for a few hours, but 60 it was. He drove it exactly 4/10 of a mile and stopped at Cheney's Self-Storage, a sprawling arrangement of new cinderblock rectangles surrounded by chain link and shiny new razor wire. Video cameras on light poles watched his every move as he parked and walked into the office. Plenty of space was available. A 10x10 bay was $48 a month, no heating, no air, a roll-down door, and plenty of lighting. "Is it fireproof?" Ray asked. "Absolutely," said Mrs. Cheney herself, fighting off the smoke from the cigarette stuck between her lips as she filled in forms. "Nothing but concrete block." Everything was safe at Cheney's. They featured electronic surveillance, she explained, as she waved at four monitors on a shelf to her left. On a shelf to her right was a small television wherein folks were yelling and fighting, a Springer-style gabfest that was now a brawl. Ray knew which shelf received the most attention.
24-hour guard, she said, still doing the paperwork. Gates locked at all times. Never had a break-in, and if one happens, then we got all kinds of insurance. Sign right here. 14B.
Insurance on $3 million, Ray said to himself as he scribbled his name. He paid cash for 6 months and took the keys to 14B. He was back 2 hours later with 6 new storage boxes, a pile of old clothes, and a stick or two of worthless furniture he had picked up at a flea market downtown for authenticity. He parked in the alley in front of 14B and worked quickly to unload and store his junk. The cash was stuffed into 42-ounce freezer bags, zipped tight to keep air and water out, 53 in all. The freezer bags were arranged in the bottoms of the 6 storage boxes, then carefully covered with papers and files and research notes that Ray had until very recently deemed useful. Now his meticulous files served a much higher calling. A few old paperbacks were thrown in for good measure. If by chance a thief penetrated 14B, he would probably abandon it after a cursory look into the boxes. The money was well hidden and as well protected as possible. Short of a safety deposit box in a bank, Ray could think of no better place to secure the money. What would ultimately become of the money was a mystery that grew by the day. The fact that it was now safely tucked away in Virginia provided little comfort, contrary to what he had hoped. He watched the boxes and the other junk for a while, not really anxious to leave. He vowed to himself that he would not stop by every day to check on things, but as soon as the vow was made, he began to doubt it. He secured the roll-down door with a new padlock. As he drove away, the guard was awake, the video camera scanning, the gate locked. Fog Newton was worrying about the weather. He had a student pilot on a cross-country to Lynchburg and back, and thunderstorms were moving in quickly, according to radar. The clouds had not been expected, and no weather had been forecast during the student's pre-flight briefing. "How many hours does he have?" Ray asked.
31, Fogg said gravely.
Certainly not enough experience to handle thunderstorms. There were no airports between Charlottesville and Lynchburg, only mountains.
"You're not flying, are you?" Fogg asked.
"I want to."
"Forget it. This storm is coming together quickly. Let's go watch it."
Nothing frightened an instructor more than a student up in heavy weather. Each cross-country training flight had to be carefully planned. Route, time, fuel, weather, secondary airports, and emergency procedures. And each flight had to be approved in writing by the instructor. Fog had once grounded Ray because there was a slight chance of icing at 5,000 feet on a perfectly clear day. They walked through the hangar to the ramp where a Lear was parking and shutting down its engines. To the west beyond the foothills was the first hint of clouds. The wind had picked up noticeably.
10 to 15 knots gusting, Fog said. A direct crosswind.
Ray would not want to attempt a landing in such conditions. Behind the Lear was a Bonanza taxiing to the ramp, and as it got closer, Ray noticed that it was the one he had been coveting for the past 2 months.
"There's your plane," Fogg said.
"I wish," Ray said. The Bonanza parked and shut down near them, and when the ramp was quiet again, Fogg said,
"I hear he's cut the price."
"How much?"
"Somewhere around $425. $450 was a little steep.
The owner, traveling alone, crawled out and pulled his bags from the rear. Fogg was gazing at the sky and glancing at his watch. Ray kept his eyes on the Bonanza, where the owner was locking the door and putting it to rest. "Let's take it for a spin," Ray said.
"The Bonanza?"
"Sure. What's the rent?"
"It's negotiable. I know the guy pretty well."
"Let's get it for a day. Fly up to Atlantic City, then back." Fogg forgot about the approaching clouds and the rookie student. He turned and looked at Ray.
"You serious?"
"Why not? Sounds like fun." Aside from flying and poker, Fogg had few other interests.
"When?"
"Saturday. Day after tomorrow. Leave early, come back late." Fogg was suddenly deep in thought. He glanced at his watch, looked once more to the west, then to the south. Dick Docker yelled from a window, "Yankee Tango is 10 miles out."
"Thank God,"
Fogg mumbled to himself and visibly relaxed. He and Ray walked to the Bonanza for a closer look.
"Saturday, huh?" Fogg said.
"Yep, all day."
"I'll catch the owner. I'm sure we can work a deal."
The winds relented for a moment, and Yankee Tango landed with little effort. Fogg relaxed even more and managed to smile.
"Didn't know you liked the action," he said as they walked across the ramp.
"Just a little blackjack. Nothing serious," Ray said.